Content warning. This podcast may contain sensitive subject matters and listener discretion is advised. The podcast is also intended as general information only and should not be taken as personal advice. Whilst every care has been taken to provide up-to-date information, we cannot take your personal circumstances and situation into account, and therefore this information should not replace the personal advice of your medical, financial, welfare or legal services. G'day and welcome to Theories of Hope. I'm your host, Miss Beck, and I hope you're having a fabulous day. One of the hardest and often first questions that I get asked when someone is initially diagnosed with an illness is how exactly they're going to be able to afford to live, how they're going to keep paying their rent or their mortgage, how on earth they're going to pay these new medical bills, how they're going to keep their kids in school and put food on the table that's nutritious. Because make no mistake, it is incredibly expensive to be sick, and it only gets harder the longer that you're sick. Yet one of the first things someone said to me when I got a disability pension was, "Oh my God, you're so lucky, you got the golden ticket." Like this is a Johnny Depp movie. Honey, a pension is not a privilege, it's a mercy. I'll repeat that again for the folks in the back. A pension is not a privilege, it's a mercy. Because if you think it's hard to afford living now, just wait until you're older. It's downright impossible to afford living and healthcare when you're over the age of 55. Yet despite these facts, a quick Google search will show you that our entire social and financial system here in Australia is predicated and predatorily based on the idea that we are all financially illiterate and not just poor. Do a Google search for disability and financial inclusion, and all of the responses, I repeat, all the top responses lead to government reports and essays about financial literacy programs for people on disabilities. Under the Morrison government, there was a government clawback robo-debt system created to target pensioners defrauding the government for social funds. And in general, it found less than 1% were actually misusing or falsely claiming funds. Less than 1%. Call any bank with an express a concern over your ability to pay something, and after waiting several hours to speak to a specialist, they will almost immediately put you on a payment plan that is registered with a credit reporting body. Reducing their fees, however, and charges is the absolute last thing they will do. Specialist lenders for financially vulnerable people aren't that much better. I got a loan through the NAB, who I bank with and I actually genuinely like. The loan was through the NAB by a good shepherd and I was never given any contact information to connect with someone from their Step Up Loans team. Got a loan, no contact information. So when I needed to update my details and I couldn't, it became a nightmare. The few times they did call me, they called from an unknown number, which my modern phone recognised as a scam call, and yet they never left a message. So it's automatically blocked. 2 years later, and a tiny debt later, it was only then that I discovered that there was an issue. It was by accident that I picked up the phone and realised who it was before I auto-hung up because I thought it was a scam caller. But my credit rating is now worse because absolutely no one at NAB's front of house banking services had ever heard of Good Shepherd Finance or the NAB Step Up Loan. And absolutely nobody could give me the contact details for the department that I needed to speak to. And neither did the community organisation who referred me to them for the loan. And any letters I received in the mail? No contact information either. Just, please call. As a person with a disability, we are overlooked, ignored, and undervalued when it comes to the workforce also. Less than 30% of us work. Not because we don't want to work, but because the system makes it unnecessarily hard. Employers have the false idea that we will use too many sick days or take too long to do our jobs, and others are just uncomfortable with the idea of seeing a disabled person in the office every day. Or they falsely believe it's going to cost too much money to adjust the workplace for our modifications. And lastly, there are far too many people who conflate the idea of any disability with imbecility and assume that we're too stupid to work. On top of that, Centrelink takes 50 cents for every dollar that you earn, over $175 gross before tax. And for those of us who live in rural areas, just finding a job or accessing the education needed to upskill and change occupations is exhausting. Take, for example, my local TAFE, which offers no accessible education or accessible education supports, and whose disability parking is on the opposite side of the disability building entrance, and whose elevators are all located in far out-of-the-way areas, requiring disabled users to trudge often long carpeted distances to get where they need to be. Making the closest accessible TAFE a 2-hour drive each way. Yet despite all of this, most of us desperately want to work, not only because it helps us financially with the exorbitant cost of healthcare, but because it helps keep us active and engaged socially. It reminds us all of what we are in spite of our limitations, the dignity of contributing to our own welfare, and the honour of using our skills and attributes to contribute to our communities in meaningful ways. Now, I don't know about you, but it means a hell of a lot to me to be able to work, even if it's only gig work. I deeply value the art of contributing to something other than myself. But it's more than just that. I don't take my pension for granted. So it means something to me to contribute back to my economy and to my community. And from talking to my peers, that is something that all of us feel. We want to contribute to our economies and our communities. The more I work, the more I'm able to afford private healthcare. Not only does that mean that I get access to quality healthcare faster, but it also means that I pay towards the cost of my procedures, and therefore the cost of those procedures is less on the Australian taxpayer. Not to mention, by working, I pay tax. And by paying tax, the estimated savings over a lifetime to the Australian economy for someone like me, on average, is approximately $1.2 million in reduced healthcare costs. Now that's over a 50-year lifespan. Now I'm not saying I'm ever going to have the capacity to work full-time or even 30 hours a week again. I am genuinely very sick, but I'm also not a bludger. And such is the case for most folks with disabilities. We're just average folks doing the best we can with the circumstances thrown at us and wishing we could do more. On the flip side of this, we have retail workers and other minimum wage workers working their asses off, many with chronic health conditions, not in receipt of government benefits, earning approximately the same amount of money each fortnight as the average pensioner. Now that for me is a problem. No person working 40 hours a week should be living off of $1,100 to $1,200 per fortnight. But that's an argument for another day. I just needed to show our hardworking minimum wage folks some respect. Now, I'm not suggesting that the pension needs to be increased or the minimum wage needs to be increased, because I do understand the effects that could have on inflation. But something needs to be done. We need more equitable offsets and the cost of medication needs to change. For example, I reach my pharmaceutical benefits limit every April to June. That's every 4 to 6 months. And half of my meds aren't even covered under the PBS system. I'm spending over $250 each fortnight on meds to keep me physically moving and out of a wheelchair. And my story is very typical of people living with a disability or chronic illness, and it only gets more expensive as we get older. So what can we do? Because, let's face it, there's no point whinging about something if we aren't going to do something about it. Well, the good news is that we do have some options, and I'm here to share them. So, starting from the beginning, and this is all from my personal experience, have your affairs in order. If you can afford it, get a lawyer and get an accountant if you can. If you cannot afford a lawyer and an accountant, seek help from the Office of the Public Advocate or similar advocacy office, state advocacy office in your state, or legal aid. If you don't already have one, get a will. They're not very expensive. Get one. Get yourself some insurance, preferably before you get sick. This is most easily done through your superannuation, where you can take out life, death, and total permanent disability insurance. I'm not working at the moment, but I still pay into my superannuation just so I can keep my death insurance. It means that if anything happens to me, within 10 days, my aunt gets a bucket load of cash. Get your advanced care directive sorted out. This is something that your public advocate or your accountant or your lawyer will be glad to help you with, as will your doctor. If something happens to you, your next of kin becomes your legal guardian and your decision maker. That means the closest to you in your family tree is your decision maker. My mum and dad are dead, so my eldest sister is my eldest family member and my closest next of kin. She's also deeply religious, and I'm estranged from her. But legally, it doesn't matter. She would be my next of kin. For obvious reasons, I need an advanced care directive so that she isn't the one making those decisions for me. An advanced care directive also allows you to put your care needs and wants into your own words and supersedes the directives of your power of attorney. For example, if my aunt is my power of attorney, but something were to happen to me, the doctors would follow my legal directive and not hers, because my voice and my words trump the opinion of my attorney. I did this because I didn't want to burden my aunt with those decisions. I just needed someone other than my religious family as my legal guardian and signatory. But also because I want the doctors to be able to make effective decisions based on my wills, my desire, and my words, in the absence of me being able to vocalize my wishes. To that end, I have also made sure that my aunt is my binding death nominee on my superannuation and death insurance. As such, that money cannot be contested and goes directly to her within 10 days of my death. As for your current finances, consider discussing options with your financial counsellor, because they are free. You should never have to pay for one. The benefits of a financial counsellor are that all creditors must immediately decease from contacting you and must only contact your financial counsellor about the matter, and any legal action must also be temporarily postponed, leaving you free from any bullying and harassment. Financial counsellors also have the authority to negotiate on your behalf, and they know and understand the ins and outs of the legal sea of the industry so as not to be taken advantage of and to advocate for your best interest with your creditors. They are also a great referral point for other services that may be a benefit to you. If you are still employed and not in a union, join one immediately. Engage their support for negotiating a new employment arrangement. Like financial counsellors, union reps understand the legal sea of workplace relations, HR, and they can support you so you don't get railroaded out of employment and ensure a smooth transition to a modified disability working arrangement. They can also assist with working with organisations like the government's Disability Working Modifications Team and such, because there is funding from the government to pay for disability modifications, and these are things that your union knows about, as would your local disability employment consultant if you chose to go down that road. If you can afford it, get an occupational therapy assessment. 90% of all claims for pensions NDIS, aged care, etc., are approved with an OT assessment. Your GP is unfortunately not a substitute, I'm afraid. There are public OTs, but the wait list is more often than not 12 to 15 months for an assessment. So if you can afford it, just go private and get one. They're usually about $500. Contact Centrelink about sickness and disability benefits and the NDIS and aged care, all about their applications, and make one. If you're having trouble with that application process, those departments can often help you with the application process. If you're not happy with the support you're receiving from them, contact your local Member of Parliament. So basically your local rep, you know, your whatever town you're in. You're in, I don't know, whatever town, Goondiwala. I don't think that's a town. But, you know, check out the local Goondiwala MP. They will have staff on board. And that's a huge part of what their staff do. Massive, like 70 to 80% of their role is just helping people with applications to social services. So if you are having problems with making applications to social services, no matter what social service it is, contact your local Member of Parliament, state, federal, all of it. Their staff can help you with applications to Centrelink, the NDIS, aged care, and any other support services. They can recommend them and they can also help you make those applications. That's especially important if you're someone from a linguistic and diverse background, or you know from LGBT background. They specialise in these supports and referrals. Contact your local council home care team for an assessment. This should be a free service as well. They can provide support and they often provide introduction to a range of other services that you might not know about, because those companies often run on a shoestring budget and therefore don't advertise everywhere, but the council will know about them. So contact your local council. They can provide a home care assessment, they can provide support, and they can provide introductions to other services that might greatly benefit you. And lastly, when you're ready, don't give up on yourself. I know it's really easy to do that, and look, as we discussed earlier, sometimes the crapulence of mankind and the system can feel really, really overwhelming, and it can just get a bit much. And I say that for all of us, not just someone who's newly diagnosed, but for someone you might have been diagnosed 10, 15, 20 years, and you're listening to this and going, sod off, like, come on, we've been around this block a few times. It can feel like things aren't getting better. Don't give up. I know it's hard. I'm not going to pretend it isn't, but don't give up. In my short time, I nursed my mum who was terminally ill. I now have a disability. Yes, the wheels of change move slowly. But I'm 39 years old, and in my years, I have seen positive change. I genuinely have. I have seen positive change. So change does happen. It does move slowly, but it does absolutely happen. And in my experience, it more effectively happens, and it happens faster through our positive involvement with the community organizations that are actively involved in advocacy. So don't give up on yourself and don't give up on our community. That means when you're ready, get involved with organizations that are actually trying to make a difference, that are actively involved in advocacy work. Places like, you know, People with Disability Australia, the Carers Association of Australia, Tandem, Vimiac, you know, these peak body organizations, but they don't always have to be peak body organizations, but organizations that are genuinely and actively involved in making a difference. Getting involved in with these organizations will not only better support your mental health, because you'll be actively engaged with working with your peers and working with people who've been around the ropes, and they'll be able to speak from experience and say, yes, the wheels of change move slowly, but they do change. So you'll get an honest representation of what it's actually like. But you'll be able to see that there is hope, and you'll be able to see that there is movement. that the more of us that get involved and the more of us that lend our voice, the faster things change. Don't be afraid to investigate other options. The gig economy, for example, working for yourself. Places like LaunchMe offer great programs to help you get started with your own micro business. And as I said, getting involved with those community groups and like-minded support organizations, because the more of us who are involved and the more of us who are standing up for our own financial well-being and our dignity and our self-respect, the louder the message becomes and the sooner things will change